Welcome to Shut Up and Ride. Well, it's an exciting one this week because Ben Atkinson and I were recording our latest podcast. We knew that Jay Hallam said he would come on the podcast, but he then said he had problems with his phone and internet and couldn't make it. And then unbeknownst to us, there he was. Just listen to our screams of joy. So here is the unexpected episode with Jay Hallam, because he managed to make it. I hope you enjoy. It's a good one, guys.
Jason!
Oh, hello, Jay. My goodness.
Hi, Jenny. How are you?
I'm good. Well, this is very exciting news, podcasters. We are welcoming to the pod the wonderful, the amazing show jumper extraordinaire. Ben's getting very overexcited. He's even worn his vest for you. Jay Hallam, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Jenny. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome. Can you see all of us? Have you got us all?
I'm choosing not to see Ben. He's in my bad books right now.
Oh, so you're in a bad mood with Ben. What happened?
He doesn't call, he doesn't write, he doesn't text. It's not the way you're meant to treat your show husband, is it?
No, wait.
He only contacts me when he needs me, and my requirement of our relationship is a little bit more than just, you know, being show lovers.
Yeah. Well, I knew I was going to get called out for this. I'm sorry I've not sent you any horrifically disgusting memes for a while. And yeah,
well,
I did have a miscall from you. I didn't mean to. Yeah, that is bad. I'm sorry.
Oh, Ben, you're in big trouble, and actions speak louder than words, and so do gifts. Let's move on.
Gifts.
Yeah, gifts.
I'm going to give context now. There's going to be a lot of people tuning in to our podcast. Jay the Tiger Hallam, you are a show jumper extraordinaire. You are very good friends to Ben and I. So anyone who doesn't know who Jay is, go and look up his Instagram, because that will tell you everything you need to know. I actually introduced these two lovers. But it's so exciting to have you on the pod. I have no idea. You have been, I don't know how many of our episodes you've listened to, but you have been mentioned many times on the pod, Jay.
Well, to be honest, every time that I've seen it advertised, I've just turned my head to the side and ignored it, because I'm just so utterly disappointed that my supposed friend and show husband would want to consider doing anything without me.
But
I,
Ben,
am emotional and slightly touchy about it, obviously.
Have you told Jay your news of why you've been a bit busy recently?
So, Jay, me and George are having a baby.
And you didn't tell me.
I'm telling you now. I'm telling you now.
Oh, my God. You're telling me over a podcast.
I'm in real trouble.
It's not yours, Jay. It is actually Ben's.
That was going to be the next question. Well, listen, if it's a boy and it's not called Jay, let's see where our friendship is here. If it's not Jay or Tiger in the name for a lad.
I think Tiger is definitely a good name. Oh, don't pout like that. Come on.
I'll stop having a mard and Ben can ring me up and tell me the good news from, you know, man to man. But I'm very happy for Georgie.
You said that
so convincingly.
Oh my God, I just thought, I'm going to have to wear George's dresses in all the shows.
Yeah, you are. You absolutely are. I think it'd be a good look. Yeah. Finally, the bride, no longer the bridesmaid. Let's go.
Exactly.
Move over, Dr.
So,
Ed.
How is the world of Jay the Tiger show jumping? How are you? What's life like at your world?
Life is busy. We seem to have a lot of young horses around at the moment. I'm at that stage of the year and my life where I'm feeling like I maybe need to minimalise a few things. suddenly when I'm walking around the fields and I'm like, oh yeah, that needs to come in and be ridden. And oh, that one's five and not had a saddle on it yet. Life's got a little bit mad like that. Just obviously busy teaching and trying to compete, and but no, otherwise good. Just working hard.
So you do. So this podcast, I don't know how much you've listened to it. This is a place where you can, it's not like, oh, so how did you get into riding? We don't give a shit. We want like the truth of the world of horses. Do you ever get days when you know you've got that much to do where you go, do you know what? I wish I was an accountant.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Especially when you've been to the local village festival the night before. Yeah, I have many days like that, and I think it's a bit unrealistic to kind of be happy about life all the time. And there are days where I'm like, what am I doing? This is ridiculous. I would ride 10 to 12 horses a day and still manage to teach, and then drive my lawnmower or do streaming or then do books and then try and have some kind of social life or personal life. And it does get really relentless, and trying to have a balance is really hard, let alone friendships, Ben. Do you know what I mean? So from that perspective, it is a constant battle, and I definitely have been trying to take a step back to see how I can make my quality of life better, because when you have high aspirations, you do get to a point in life where, you know, I'm unfortunately the wrong side of 40. You have to be serious about where your career is going, but you also have to have a business and make bills pay and have a life. You know, there's no point in working yourself into an early grave. So I'm definitely at that point of my career or life where I'm really evaluating what I should and shouldn't be doing.
You think, especially when you're feeling like this, I think everybody can get to feel a bit like it sometimes, no matter what your job is. And especially when you're doing a job like we all do, do you ever just want to sort of scream or strangle someone when they're like, oh, but you do what you love. It's not really work. It's not work for you. Oh, you get to do what you love, so it's never work. And you're like, ugh.
You get to play with ponies all day.
Yeah, but I think I just bury my head in the sand and then not answer my phones or reply to messages or emails. And just like, I'm on a one-way train to just trying to get everything done with as less noise as possible, if that makes sense.
Do you think as well, with the way the world has changed, I mean, I've known you for, I must have known you like 15 years now, Jay. Instagram, especially.
Yeah, I was like 6 years old then, wasn't I?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, you were. You were definitely six. Do you think there's a very much an Instagram versus reality about your life as well? Because a lot of people now with social media, we all see, and we all do it, don't we? We post the, oh, look at me going to this show. But it's actually, I think on your Instagram, you are quite, yeah, another tractor drive, another bit of horse work. But I think it does paint our lives as a lot happier than sometimes they might be.
Yeah, I kind of always think about not worrying about the pretty, because I actually find it slightly icky when you see everybody's Instagram where it's like perfect life and, you know, Instagram moments. It's just not real. It's just crap, isn't it? So I'm not afraid of the ugly. And I think that's probably that midlife crisis thing where you just don't give a shit.
I don't. Look at me. Look how greasy my hair is. I'm on a podcast that we're putting out and I look horrendous. Old me, 30-year-old Jenny would never have got on camera looking like this.
You've got a great face for radio.
Oh, yeah, I know, right? So, we can't all look like Ben bloody Atkinson, all right?
Do you? Yeah, oh my God. This is going to take Daddy to a whole new level. Carry on, Ben.
So do you ever find yourself... Sorry, just
he's got all shy.
Do you think you get yourself into those situations? I know that I say yes to too many things. People come up and like they'll give you an opportunity, whether it's like, could you ride this horse for me, or could you come to this event, or would you be involved in X, Y, Z? And you say yes to everything because you're like, oh, I need to, you know, that's another great aspect for the business, or that could be a great window for me into something else. And then you actually realise you're like, oh my goodness, I don't know how on earth I'm going to keep all these plates spinning. And then it can feel a bit like drowning.
Yeah. Yeah, I think sometimes you do, but I think I always feel like it's very much a one-man show because it's me that has to do the teaching. It's me that organises the riding and doing the riding and planning shows. And it does get heavy. And obviously when things are going really well, it dumbs down and you don't have those thoughts. And I think generally I'm a really positive person, but, you know, we all have shit days and bad days and everything. So it's just trying to, yeah, you do feel like you're drowning sometimes with the, like, the workload and everything. And even with shows, recently I've entered a couple of shows and I've kind of not gone because the ground's been rubbish or, and where before I'd be like, I've got to go. It's like I entered a show the other day that's 2.5 hours away for a qualifier. And I'm like, I'm too busy. I haven't got time to go and do it. It's not the end of the world if you miss a qualifier to go and jump a set of sticks in a different county. Like, you just have to take a pause sometimes and be realistic, don't you?
And questioning yourself as to, are you doing it because you want to do it, or are you doing it because it's what's expected of you? Take, like you say, going to that.
My God, this is deep.
Well, that's like, well, that's how you like it. No, it's the, that's...
Welcome to the Sharp and Ride podcast, where no holes are barred, literally.
Yeah.
We chose the name for the podcast by what Jay says to me. No. The what I meant, I was trying to be profound and deep.
I think there's a level of expectation, moving on from your absolute filth, there is a level of expectation, but I think it's just some weird inherent workaholic thing that just keep ploughing. And I think it actually is important to take a pause sometimes and reflect on what you're doing and are things going well enough to be doing it. But, you know, when you see, I see people all the time and they're going to a show every week and the horses are jumping all the time. I'm like, how do you earn money? How do you have I'm very fortunate that I've created my bubble for myself, but it's all been me. It's like, I've been very lucky to have some amazing people in my life, but it's from a product of hard work. Where I'm like, how do these people make money? Because going to shows doesn't make you any money. And if they say that they're winning enough, it's a lie because there's not enough prize money to keep, you know, pay a mortgage and everything else. So, you know, it's either from a place of privilege or their work in the local red light district or something to fund it all. I don't know. I still scratch my head.
Do you think that's one of the biggest Instagram versus realities about the industry? I don't know many people who get to ride professionally that don't have a side hustle, whether that side hustle be teaching or training young horses for someone else or selling horses or running a yard or whatever it may be.
I think it's also about having that stepping back. Like, I'm naturally not very good. I'm not a seller of horses. And I've bred that many that I've now got to sell a load because we've got that many. And I've been very lucky that we've bred some really nice ones. And, you know, one's been to the World Equestrian Games and there's some in America and blah, blah, blah. But I think some people naturally can sell their granny and some people can't. And I'm the latter. Do you know what I mean? And it's one of those things in life where actually I've now got to get better at it because otherwise I'm going to be broke and have loads of mouths to feed.
So I've known you a long time, right? We've already discussed. When I first met you, you were dating a rider, am I allowed to say? You were dating Spencer Wilson when I first met you. And then you guys parted companies. I was very sad. I was like, my gay best friends are breaking up. But your now partner is a non-equestrian. Do you think a non-equestrian partner helps you find a balance? And do, like, you sometimes go out in London and you do other stuff? Or do you think it helped when your partner knew more about the horsey side of things?
I think the situation that I'm in now is a better situation, but it's a better balance with work life. And I'm very fortunate that Ed, my partner, is from a farming background and is good around the animals.
And hot, like super hot.
Smoking hot. And totally gets, you know, he's made friends in the industry and everything. And I'm very, very lucky. And I suppose that's why it works so well between us. I think it's really hard to live and work with somebody that is in the same industry, because it always then gets centered around one person more than the other. I mean, even in Georgie and Ben's relationship, it's obviously all about Ben, the god that is Ben. But obviously Georgie has her side hustle because she's a farrier.
Yeah.
So therefore it's same, but a bit different. But I think when you have two competitive riders, I think it's really hard to get the balance, because it always shifts more towards one person than the other's career.
I was going to say, I think it's more like the life chaos. I think it's really hard when two people have a chaotic life, because like George is a farrier, so her work can be quite regimented. Like as long as she knows what events I'm going to and which shows I'm going to, and she decides which event she wants to come to, then she can kind of structure her schedule to work with those sorts of things. And in the same way that if, like, you know, if you've got a normal job, like you know that you start work at whatever, 7, 8, 9 o'clock
in the morning. Monday to Friday, and you have a bank holiday off.
Yeah, like you.
What does that feel like?
They know what they're doing with their life, whereas with all three of us, like, you never know. Like, the phone could ring tonight, and it's like, there's an opportunity. I'm now going there with these horses, or like, I need to fly to this country. I need to move. Like, and you just have to go, and it's so immovable. And it takes us such a long time to climb the ladders to get to the points where we are in our careers, that then that can make, I know, especially for me and George, like in all relationships I've been in my life, there can become some hard conversations. And if they don't understand that that's the sort of the chaos and then the dedication to the art of what you're doing, I think that's the hardest part.
What I think about you as well, Jay, is when you see your Instagram or your social media for people who follow you on there, because I think a lot of people don't follow show jumping as a sport. They wouldn't necessarily. I think that's mainly the problem with a lot of people like I've worked for, Horse and Country, Global Champions Tour. Not enough people watch it. They love the following and the influencers and the social media, because they get to follow the real life. But what I think you're bad at is not telling people how amazing you are as a trainer. Because you've had success. I've seen you at Hoy's and all of the show jumping that you do. But you have trained some pretty impressive people who have just been at the Olympics and won gold medals. And you kind of go, oh, I'm really proud of Laura. She just won badminton. And if that was me, I'd be like, yeah, I trained that person. I taught that herbivore how to jump sticks. Like, you are such an amazing coach. And I have worked with some of the best in the world. You can't talk yet. I'm still bigging you up. Honestly, some of the best riders in the world on the planet, and they couldn't teach a fucking grasshopper how to hop, because they just cannot translate it. You've even taught Ben how to jump. I mean, you are just such a good trainer, and I don't think that obviously, because you're not someone who would big yourself up like that, but I think that's where people wouldn't know about you. If people listening to this, I don't think would know that how good you are at training.
Well, firstly, thank you very much. I just think that there's, I don't know, it's a little bit, there are just some things that I get a bit icked out about pushing, and that's why I'm not very good at selling horses, because I would rather just somebody come and want one rather than trying to shove one down somebody's neck kind of thing. And it's like, most people don't know that I've bred a world championship event horse, and you know, that we do all, as much breeding and it's been as successful as it is. And I feel the same with my teaching. I repost, think, you know, if people have jumped clear and I've given them a lesson the day before and what have you. But I'm hoping that there's just a little bit more substance in success rather than showboating everything. And that's, I think, the slightly gross side of social media when people are really grossly, I don't know. It's just, as much as I'm proud of what I've done, I think it's something that's a bit more silent in me now. Maybe me 10 years ago being more arrogant and needing a clip round the year, I would have done. But as I've matured, I don't feel like I need to, because I want people to come to me because they want to come to me rather than to brag about it. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I have a confidence in what I do. And I think a confidence and an arrogance, you know, it can be, it's a fine line.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think maybe 5-10 years ago, I was an arrogant, and I feel like I've learnt to centre it all a little bit. My God, I'm so grown up.
I was just going to say, do you think it's yourself, like, the part that makes you so amazing at teaching is your ability to view, analyse, and then see what the flaws are or what needs to be changed, and then to move forward. That doesn't matter if you're teaching a person on their horse, or if you're teaching me on one of your horses, or if you're riding a horse on your own in the arena. You can analyse those flaws and see them really clearly. And you think that's what also maybe, I think it is, what holds you back from celebrating yourself, because you're so brilliant at watching everything back, at feeling it and seeing it, that you can see, even when you've, you know, like you said, you've had success with yourself on your own horses, when you've had horses that you've bred purposely for a job, then they succeed at it or helped riders succeed. You're that mindset that makes you brilliant at helping people and animals and stuff in that way is what then makes you analyze yourself too much and makes you sort of stops you from giving yourself that praise.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I sometimes am really proud of how, say, a horse has jumped in the ring, and I go to put the video on social media and I'm like, God, I look like a sack of shit. I can't put that on. And I'm really then disappointed because I'm so critical of what I do. I'm like, even though the horse jumped good, I literally look like Humpty Dumpty up on top. So I'm not putting that video on, kind regards. Do you know, like, I do that.
But if the horse jumped well, then that was absolutely the correct way to ride it.
I know, but people are so judgy.
They are so judgy.
A bit of me does care and a bit of me doesn't give a shit. But it's that I'm like just always, I don't know, I suppose because I'm quite outgoing and I can be a little bit wild, I am, I don't know, trying it. I think with maturity, try to be a bit more measured with stuff because, yeah, I think that maybe that was a negative part of a younger me where I, you know, every day's a school day and you're trying to evolve as a person.
But you still love your fancy dress, let's face it, because you in a fancy dress. I've seen many a fancy dress. And I think when you're riding in fancy dress, that is bloody vintage Jay Hallam. I fucking love it. Not going
to
lie.
I know, but I've learned a lesson. After the last one I did at Hickstead, I actually had an MUA do my makeup when I was Tina Turner. But a young Darcy Breen told me to wipe it off with toilet roll and makeup remover. The skin around my eyes peeled off. I looked like I'd been punched in the face for about 3 days after. I am definitely not made for drag. Definitely, definitely, definitely not. It was absolutely bloody awful. I looked like shit for about a week. He ain't ever going to be a drag queen.
That is brilliant. You have won some pretty epic costumes, but we're never going to see Tina Turner ever again. This is sad times.
Yeah, no, exactly. Apart from the fish set stockings, but I might leave that for Ben and mine's private show.
So to go back to a serious point as well, obviously we've moved on a little bit. We have discussed the recent goings on that have been going on in the equestrian world. And we've spoken a lot about kind of what happened with Charlotte. But I feel like now there's been a knock-on effect in the dressage world, and there's now things coming out in the Telegraph that we should never ride horses ever again, and should it be in the Olympics?
I've got a really strong point about this.
Oh, okay. Ooh, I was just going to say, has this come through to the show jumping world in the same way as
I actually, quite some time ago, contacted some of our leading journal kind of companies or whatever. I'm not going to name any names. It winds me up immensely when people like, say, the Horse and Hound or BEF or any of the governing bodies of whether it's British Show Jumping BE, I think it's such rubbish, cheap journalism to allow people to make comments on suggested posts. And it really worries me. I worry for Charlotte. I haven't spoken to her about her mental health and everything. And I just feel like these keyboard warriors are making comments in a snapshot of somebody's life that ruins their life. And whether they've done right or wrong, it is not down for their comment to degrade that person's life. But I also think it's the responsibility of Horse and Country, Horse and Hound, FEI, not to allow comments. Because what you're doing is giving these Susans and whoever they are a platform, because Susan only has 60 followers on her social media, but all of a sudden they've been given a voice for hundreds of thousands of people to read. And I think that then it has a bigger thing, because then when the Daily Telegraph goes on to British Show Jumping or Horse and Countries and reads all of these comments, they've got a shit story to write about. And I think it's a responsibility of all of the governing bodies, whether it's racing, dressage, whatever. And I think also through all sports, because nobody should be made shit from somebody else's comment. And I just fear that one day, or somebody is feeling that low that they want to hurt themselves or, you know, commit suicide. And I feel like I'm really passionate about it. It's their responsibility for the journalism, or to anyone with a platform, they just shouldn't be able to make a comment. If Susan wants to share it and make a comment, then that's fine, because only 60 people are going to see it. But don't let somebody with a massive profile then I'm using Susan, it's a bad name, but you know what I mean. Don't give her a voice.
Yeah.
And I'd been trying to contact people to try and have an influence in this, because I do feel really passionate about it. And, you know, whether you agree with what Charlotte's done or any of these people that have been filmed, in a snapshot around an animal, anybody could be deemed to be doing something cruel. And I'm not sticking my neck out on the line for Charlotte in this given moment, but so many of these things are a snapshot. Do you know what I mean? It's like when someone says about a horse being Rolka. Well, Ben's horses can trot around in Rolka without a bridle on. So is he cruel? Do you know what I mean? His horses don't even have a bit on, but I've seen them stick their heads on their chest as they're trotting around.
I think with Charlotte's, though, there was absolutely no way that that was something that could be misconstrued. I think in the video, it was it was, very obviously not great. Do you know what I mean? There was no second side to that.
And I think that she's got to live with that for the rest of her life. But I don't think when, you know, in those situations, people get death threats.
Horrible. I know she's had death threats. Yeah.
So therefore, but that has all stemmed, I think, from people being able to make comments and it getting circulated. And I'm not condoning abuse of animals by any stretch of imagination, but it's circulating because of it. And I think that for me is a negative with the social media.
So it's like, I think it's it's if you're going to be if you're going to be a platform like Horse and Hound or something like that, that you know a lot of people are going to go to get their guidance and news from, I think there is a burden of responsibility to not only report upon what has happened, but then to, like, because you could, in one paragraph, describe the situation that happened with Charlotte and then spend the rest of a big article talking, not just almost forgetting that she exists, and talk about the, is this is an issue in the wider industry? And what solutions could we be doing? What could you be doing? What are you messing up with? Well, how could you be being better? Like, because I think that's it. It's inflammatory journalism that works on the idea of getting that clickbait start. And I think it's turning the horse world crazy. Like, have you guys seen the stuff where people, I don't know whether it's true or not, but did you see all that stuff where people are accusing Horse and Hound of editing the mouth of Lottie Fry's, a picture of Lottie Fry that's on the front cover of Horse and Hound?
To be honest, I go on social media, do my little flick through, and then I don't actually read much of it, to be perfectly honest. I can't even watch the news on BBC because I just think half of it's a load of rubbish, and I just carry on in my own ignorant little bubble and just block out the noise.
But don't you think that's the same? So like, and I'd say it's across the board. Like, whether it be horses or reporting on world events in the normal news, it's all fearmonger and to stoke those feelings of hate and anger and resentment in people, but then doesn't actually give you any way to say, this is how we would make the world better. Like, here's an issue. How do we move forward with this to make it better? And I agree with you, Jay, in that the way to make something, make the world better, is never to bully a person into the point of self-harm or suicide. I think anybody who disagrees with that statement, it's not going to be long before it happens.
Yeah.
And it has happened in other industries.
Yeah. Look at Caroline Flack.
Absolutely. But I feel like it's solely, and I'm not kind of, I'm using Horse and Hound and Horse and Country and FEI just because they're just platforms that jump out straight away. But I think in all walks of life, and I know that they obviously have to get readers in and pull, they can still do a poll or something like that, or send your questions in or whatever. But they, I just think their comment section is just, it should just be stopped, and they can turn it off.
I think my only my only disagreement on this is,
oh, well, no, this is the point. You can have your opinion.
I'll fight you for it.
This could be the first lover's tiff.
Especially in this country, the way it's going at the moment, I'm terrified for a loss of free speech. I think we are on dodgy ground.
There's a difference between free speech and having an opinion and bullying someone, in my opinion.
Yeah, I disagree with you. I disagree with you because I feel that most of the people making those comments aren't necessarily horse people or animal people anyway. And yeah, I disagree. I don't think, and I think actually in all of it, all it's doing is making it that we won't be riding horses in the future.
Yeah.
You know, it's killing all of it because before you know it, no one will be riding a horse ever again. And it will get that bad.
I agree with you on that. I agree with you that it's bad for, you know, the public view of the sport and all of those sorts of things. Like, when it was all coming out in the news a few years ago about, you know, like, sexual predators in gymnastics with children and stuff, and it makes you question it, and you're like, well, I'm not sending my kids to do gymnastics, am I? Because I don't want that. But I think the burden of proof lies with the person publishing the article. Write a better article that doesn't encourage that sort of behaviour. Because people are encouraged towards that sort of behaviour.
Well, it's clickbait, isn't it?
I just think we're on a slippery slope. Like, you can go to prison for what you write on Facebook and Instagram and stuff now in this country.
I remember once I won a Grand Prix, quote unquote, and I said, He felt so amazing it could have been four holes bigger. My quote in said column was, it should have been four holes bigger.
Ah, yeah. And there's a big difference in what you're saying.
Which is,
it made me look like a complete arrogant twat. Because yeah. that's not what the words that came out of my mouth. I said he felt so good it could have been four holes bigger.
Yeah.
Do you know
yeah.
what I mean? And that's
which is you praising
and,
the horse.
Yeah, because the horse felt amazing on that day. Not me saying, oh, I won it because it wasn't very big, because then you look like a right tool. But yeah, that's the that side lazy. Of the sport and the industry that I dislike. But yeah, it's shit journalism, basically.
So Pammy Hutton got bullied on social media the other day and wrote a post about it on Facebook. And I love Pammy and I will defend her till the end of the earth. She's a very kind human who has been through a lot and she's helped me in so many ways. So I screen grab some of the horrible things that people have sent me in the past. And this is one of them, which I thought you guys would find entertaining. She is the ultimate tit and has that stink attitude. It goes on for quite a long time. Her position, she's a mediocre equestrian who happens to have a media career in horses. Her position has given her access to riders better than her, and she seems to often think she's on the same level as them.
Oh, God.
Oh, this is another one. She genuinely thinks she's some sort of celebrity. She's a ghastly woman. It's hilarious, really. Oh, they go on. There's millions of them. I could literally
not.
Send you...
I try not to make many comments on things. I may or may not have in the past, but I had to put a comment on a while back when there was a picture of one of my very good friends who's friends with you, Laura Tomlinson, where she's leant over and kissing the horse on the neck. And some stupid idiot had said, oh, poor horse leaning all over it. Why can't she sit up? She leant forward and kissed it on the neck. I'm like... For God's sake, what is wrong with these people?
But then there's that argument, isn't it, that you are in the limelight, so therefore you should take it on the chin. But in my opinion, just...
No, we love our animals.
Just don't be
we're
so fucking
people,
mean.
We're feelings. Yeah. No one needs to say, oh, yeah, Jenny Rude or whatever. God, what an arsehole. You don't want to read that about yourself. It's not very nice. People just need to be nice.
I am an arsehole, but it's fine.
People punch up, not down. Yeah. Remember that.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, no one's punching down. No one above you is coming at you.
No.
And it is that. No. And there are loads of those little things out there you can say. You know, don't take criticism from someone that you wouldn't take advice from, and all of that. But I do know what you mean with the how you feel on socials. Like I know for myself on my social media, here's a fun thing. So if you write horrible things about me on my Facebook, you're about to find out that it doesn't actually even mean anything. Because I go through, Facebook has a brilliant thing where I can make a list of words, which if they appear, words or sentences or phrases, and if they appear in my Facebook comments, they immediately get deleted. And the beauty of it
is... Oh my God, is that why you never write back to me?
the beauty of it is that the person who posts it thinks that it's being posted. So they write their horrible comment and press send, and to them it appears on Facebook, but no one else on Facebook can see it, not even me. It's gone. So it's great, because then horrible little angry people
get
to be horrible and little and angry, and it's impotent, isn't it?
I do my own social media, and I have to say, touch wood, I haven't ever really received anything that... is too damning. I have in the past had stuff written about me but on a personal level, nothing to do with me in the industry. And I found that really, really upsetting. Actually, it was an earlier time in my life when I was kind of coming out and stuff like that. And there were all sorts of comments about me. And I felt like I didn't need to say come out because my sexuality is my own thing kind of thing, and yeah. It wasn't for anyone else to talk about, but it was on a forum and discussed for loads of people to see. And I thought that and that at the time really upset me, because I wasn't, you know, what I do in my own personal time, as long as I'm not hurting anyone, it's down to me. And how people have the audacity to go on and then write something about you personally when they don't know you but think they know a situation that you're in, that shit.
Yeah.
And uncalled for.
Absolutely. It doesn't need to be personal. I think that's the problem as well. I think there's having an opinion and saying, especially if you're with horses or whatever, but just being mean and having an opinion about someone's private life, it's just totally uncalled for and not necessarily. And anyone just needs to spend 5 minutes with you to know that you're a laugh, you love your animals to an obsessive point, by the way. And you love Ben Atkinson, especially naked. So it's just like... You're a good human. So moving away from that, we have to also, I want to talk about, because I feel like he needs to get a mention because he was such a big part of your life and I loved him, is I feel like we need to say, I'm going to cry, VIP. Can we talk about him? Can we give him a mention?
He's on my kitchen table at the moment.
Literally,
he's on my kitchen table at the moment. Slightly alarming. So, he was amazing. He was, I know everybody has that one horse in their life that just makes you go a little bit gooey inside, but he was a super special horse, and I'm very, very lucky to have, you know, had him in my life and been a part of his, really. And he was cool. And, you know, the sad thing about him, he got to 22, he jumped at Bolesworth with Emily, the girl that I trained, just round a 1.5, 1.10 class. Really good. And then the day that he took a turn, he literally rolled in the middle of the day. And I'm like, this isn't his routine kind of thing. And then he got up and I was like, I think you're a bit colicky. So I gave him some Buscopan, put him on the horse walker. Fine. A few hours later, I'm like, Really mild. And I thought, I'm just going to get the vet to come and tube you. And then basically when they came to tube him, he refluxed. So at this point, it was still really super mild, not the end of the world kind of thing, kind of very, we picked it up early. And then basically because he refluxed, nothing was passing. So I took him straight in. And it's that kind of phone call with his owner, Rachel. You know, you can't operate on a 22-year-old horse. No. It's not fair on him. And not only is the anaesthetic and everything else, but it's the rehab. And, you know, he needed to go until he dropped, basically, because he loved life. He was really sound and healthy and everything else. So at least he wasn't suffering for too long and everything else. And it's crap. But, yes, he got cremated. And we collected the basket of his ashes. And let me tell you, that's a whole horse in one basket.
Oh, wow.
Blow me down. It's a good job I go to the gym because it's quite heavy.
Oh, my goodness. And they give it to you in a basket?
Yeah, well, we ordered the basket. So what we're going to do is I need to take some of the basket out with me, but I'm going to scatter some of his ashes in the dyke at Hickstead, because one of his funniest things ever, when I jumped my first show at Hickstead on him, he had to jump a 140 class with, and they jumped two parts of the dyke, and it wasn't really a stopper or anything like that, but he went to go in, decided, hell fucking no, is he going to jump the dyke, and he jumped the hedge to the left of it to get away from
it. I remember this.
And it was like one of those really funny things. Like, he was like, nope, absolutely, categorically not going to be a Derby horse. And it was just like one of those really funny things. Really, I should scatter a bit at Your Horse Live as well, because he did Your Horse Live God knows how many times. Like, we're just going to put a piece of him everywhere where we have a memory of him, basically, which would be kind of sweet and stuff. But yeah, he's currently on my kitchen table.
That's so, and if you, obviously, I just loved him. He was, I've worked with him so many times. He was the ultimate professional to film with.
He did make Ben look good.
He did make Ben look good.
Wait, I nearly got decked when I rode the other one. Not the horse's fault, my terrible riding. So, yeah, was that class that you and I watched him jump at Bolesworth the last time he competed?
With Emily, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When we
sat
having our coffee.
Holding hands.
Yeah,
I'm just so glad I managed to come and see him when I was back in England last, and I brought the kids to see him.
I know, and your kids were giving him kisses. Yeah, no, he was a lovely horse, and yeah, he was special. He's special. I mean, they're all special, but he was that little bit extra special.
And if you think, if you could, like, with humans, we give them like a funeral and you say a few words, like, what would you say? Like, if you could give them a little eulogy, what would you say?
Before I say this, I'm not really a funeral person. I hate funerals. But I'd be like, good on you, granddad, kick on up there. Like, just straight up. He was a good guy. He was a good guy. If he was a human, he'd be the best person. You know, some horses, I've had horses in the past. There was one horse that I won a lot on, and we had a great relationship when I was riding him. On the floor, I hated him. He was an arsehole. and it's knowing what your relationship is with that horse. And at the time, I said to the groom that was working for me, I cannot do anything with this horse other than ride it, because that's what our relationship was. He was the biggest idiot to do anything with, and I never wanted to fall out with him. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Because, your relationship professional.
Yeah, because if he was a person, I would have really despised him. Do you know what I mean? Surely,
yeah,
surely.
I know exactly we've all had a horse.
Yeah, and I think it's knowing what your relationship. Some of them love all the gooey stuff, where some of them are just workmen, and they don't like all of that. I mean, Ben obviously highlights that with his horses a lot, with the relationship that he has with them, and obviously they all love me.
They do love you.
Yeah. My favourite thing was watching you ride Mojo and screaming as Ben got him to do all his dancing and rearing, and you just screaming your head off, Jay.
I liked the rearing. I didn't like the cutting.
No.
Right, well, we have been talking to you today for an hour already. Ben, is there anything else you would like to ask Jay the Tiger Hallam while we have him for the nation?
I do.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if Ed and George turn bad, like, we're together, right? That's... 100%.
Well, as long as you promise that you communicate a little bit better, because you've been underperforming.
Welcome to my world, by the way. Trying to get him onto a podcast is like trying to get something funny. I've run out of funny, but imagine something funny I was about to say.
Well, I remember when we were going to do Lights, Camera, Atkinson. What did I want to do? What did I want to call it?
Something really inappropriate.
Bareback with Ben.
That was
Yeah, I wanted to call it Bareback with Ben.
The camera should have been there earlier. You'd have seen Jay in a towel making me breakfast. It was great.
No, I don't want to see that. Also, thanks. I don't think so. Things I don't want to see.
You know what? The really funny thing is when we've spoken about it, and they're like, "Oh, what was the highlight of the show?" And Ben was like, "When I turned up and Jay was in a towel and cooking me breakfast."
It was worse than that. Like, what's the highlight of the show? When Jay made me breakfast, which has made it sound wonderfully ominous.
Almost a bit creepy there.
Yeah. How do you like your eggs fertilised?
Oh, my God. Oh,
I'm
wow.
Telling you,
right.
I think we need to make an over 18 past watershed show. Me and Jay probably dancing at Bolesworth. I think that is our highlight.
Oh, my goodness. So, actually, before we go, Ben and I got a little bit merry at Bolesworth the other year, and may or may not have thought that we were on some stage in some Las Vegas show. And the comments I actually, and pictures that I got sent on social media were quite alarming.
I think what was more alarming to me was while we were at Bolesworth, like, we would be, like, pole dancing together on some kind of light near the dance floor, and then someone would come up and I'd feel this tap, and someone would be like, "Would you have a picture with my daughter? She's a big fan." And I'd be like, it is 1 a.m, I'm, you know, Jay's wearing me like a scarf. This is the strangest time to meet your children. And why are they here? Why are your children out in this at this time?
Yeah. They should be in bed.
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to be asking Jay for babysitting tips right now. Like,
you know what? I love kids.
You are very good with kids. You are very good with kids.
Jay.
Honestly, all joking aside, I'm saying it here now. Boy, I always knew that Jay Atkinson, Jay Tiger Atkinson.
JT.
Wow.
That's cute.
Wow.
The Tiger.
Right.
Raw.
Final question, Jay the Tiger Hallam. If 12-year-old Jay, if you could speak to him now, would 12-year-old Jay be pleased with where you're at in life?
Oh, my God, I feel like this is like the finale of RuPaul's Drag Race. Have you got some Tic Tacs? I would say, go to school, you stupid little boy. Get a career and have horses as a hobby.
And that is your advice for anyone who wants to get into show jumping.
No, horses full stop. Get a career, not horses.
Oh, I love it. Right. All that is left to say is thank you so much for coming on. Jay the Tiger Hallam, thank you so much for being our second guest. I hope you'll come back again. We love having you on. And also, there's a lot of shout about us doing a pub pod and all meeting up. People want to meet us and get together and do a pub podcast. So you have to come to that one when I'm back in the UK.
Well,
would
you
come
know,
on again?
I'm just always waiting for the invite. And like I say, I can't believe it's taken you this long. If I'm the second person, who was the first?
Tom Rowland.
That's even more outrageous. I know, he was here just the day before last, helped him with Pammy's flying cow, and today he jumped clear.
He did jump for clear. The flying cow, is that what you call Ebony?
I love her.
Isn't she great?
I love her.
She does nothing. She does nothing with her ears backed.
No, she's a babe. Anyway. Oh. Even though I love Tom, I'm just disappointed that I wasn't your first pick. In fact, why am I not even on the podcast full time?
Can I just say, because you don't answer your bloody phone either.
What, and Ben Atkinson does?
I have too many. Right, you're all rubbish. All I'm going to say now is, can you just go shut up and ride?